Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Today, the Justice Department has released Special Counsel Robert Mueller's redacted report. NPR News will have comprehensive coverage as the story unfolds. Listen to Here and Now on SDPB Radio after In the Moment to stay informed and up to date. Now, a journalist's job might entail speed reading a highly anticipated 400-page report. More often, a story begins with simply making a few phone calls. SDPB's Kevin Wooster writes the On the Other Hand blog. You can find it online at sdpb.org/Wooster. And today he joins us for a look at a reporter's job and how it continues to change. Kevin Wooster, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be back on the phone, having a phone call.
Having a phone call just starts with a few phone calls, and in South Dakota, a whole lot of windshield time as you get from
place. It does, and I would tell you that those two things, windshield time, meeting people, making a lot of phone calls, are two of my favorite parts about a journalist's life. I'm not a great data studier. I'm not a great paper file. You know, somebody like Seth Tupper and other people that can go into all this dense material and seem to enjoy it and really connect with it well. That's not something I do well, reading redacted reports, FOI stuff. I've done it, and you try to do it, but it's not my strength. I would say that I think my strength over the years has been making a few calls, talking to people, showing up at a gas station, showing up at a restaurant or a cafe, talking to people and working that. And, you know, that's, to me, that's the best part of the business, is those personal connections. The others are increasingly important, I think, the data inquiries and the data examinations. And I'm just not all that good at that. So maybe it's good I'm 67 at this point.
When Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein came to Augustana for the Beau Forum, Bernstein called that shoe leather journalism. And talked about how the benefit was they were city reporters. They were covering the crime beat, and that's how they ended up with the story of a lifetime, really, there. And you were invited to speak at the Pennington County Bar Association banquet. Tell us a little bit about how that came about.
Well, I got a call from Lisa Garcia, and she's a KOTA anchor here, has been for quite a while. But what a lot of people may not know when they see her on TV is that she's also a professional attorney, a lawyer, and works for a law firm here in town, and also raised some kids. And I'm always amazed by that kind of stuff, because I pretty much had trouble doing one job for a lot of years. And people can mix two professions like that is pretty impressive. And when she called, she was working on the Pennington County Bar Association annual banquet and wanted a keynote speaker and asked me if I would talk about free press and free speech, which are big issues right now. They're always big, but I think especially big these days. And as I said in the blog, it's hard to turn down somebody that manages as much as she does by telling them I'm a semi-retired guy. I can't find time to do that. So I'm the one they're going to get, like it or not, come May 3rd.
And how do you put together thoughts on that? Because, really, she asked you for a reason. And one of those reasons is you've seen this industry up close and personal in South Dakota change as rapidly as it has. And you were, you were around before a lot of the things that had happened.
Yeah, and I think that's what she was calling for. And I was relieved by that she wasn't going to ask me to explain the First Amendment to a bunch of lawyers. Looking back on experience and how the First Amendment has affected my work and how, free speech and free press have been such an important part of my life. And looking back at how we use that and how things have changed in many ways, because I was lucky enough to get into journalism in the 1970s and to really go through a great period of time with full staffs and a lot of resources and pretty generally high regard for the business compared to perhaps what it is now. And before all this stuff started to fall away and before things like shoe leather journalism was cut back, because when you cut staffs in half, it's hard to get people out on the street working sources and talking to people. When you might spend 4 hours in conversation and you can't turn a story around that day, your editors start getting desperate and saying, I need copy. And so there was a time when I could take off from the Argus later in the late 70s and early 80s and be gone 4 or 5 days working on a couple of stories. And those days are long gone.
You reached out to another experienced South Dakota journalist in Randall Beck to have a conversation about this. What did you find?
I did. You make calls, and that's how I build speeches or build presentations, is by talking to other people and running that back through what I think. And Randall was my boss at the Argus for a while, and we, I think, had a good relationship. Occasionally he yelled at me and I yelled back, but that's newsroom reality. And he's a smart guy with an experience at many levels of newspapering. And, you know, as you know very well, is continuing to work on that in retirement with South Dakota News Watch, which I support and believe is an important addition to the mainstream media in South Dakota. And his concerns were interesting because he's concerned, as I am, by the relentless attack by Donald Trump and his supporters on the media, you know, with the whole enemy of the people stuff, things that were kind of unprecedented in my experience. We've been attacked before during Watergate. Bill Janklow, as I'm going to say in the speech, was certainly good at attacking individual reporters for its specific things. And his was usually very specific and it didn't, you know, relegate the entire media into enemies category at all. So I'll compare and contrast that a little bit. And also the concern Randall has about the declining resources and what that means to a free press and a democracy. So.
Did he have a sense of the future? Because I think, you know, the idea that newspapers or, you know, print newspapers are struggling. Is it the whole industry? What was he thinking about, and what are you thinking about what's next as far as the big challenges in decline?
Well, yeah, I think he said he was deeply concerned, as we all are, and his way of putting it was that the resources that have been whacked out of the mainstream journalism world, newspapers were first, he said, but don't make a mistake about it. Other media outlets of all kinds are under assault through the economy, through different business models, through competition from the internet and this whole world of information that's everywhere that sometimes people confuse as news when it's not. And newspapers got hit hardest because we had this horrible model where we had to deliver this paper product at 4 o'clock in the morning, and it's not a very efficient system, and it's getting less, a lot reliable and able to work on all the time to function with. And so, you know, the broadcast outlets were a little bit immune from that initial surge, that missile damage, but everybody's facing it in the professional news business. That's where the challenge is how to keep professional news outlets in business.
All right, we only have a couple minutes left, and so I hate to kick this sidebar off right now with you because we might have to talk about it in the future. But sure. Republican State GOP Chairman Dan Lederman was on the show, on our show this week, and he talked about the effectiveness of President Trump's use of Twitter to bypass the media and talk directly to the people, and how popular that has been in South Dakota. So one of the things he said a lot of Republicans that resonates with, which I'm not. There's some thinking to do on that.
Yeah. Well, if you like a flow of inaccurate information, you and sometimes just outright lies, you're going to love Donald Trump's tweets. And some of it is of course true. And a lot of it isn't. And much of the time, this particular president doesn't seem to care whether it is or not. And if that's your avenue, that's your, the way you want to get information, God help us all. Because there's nothing responsible about it. There's nothing committed to accuracy or truth about it. It is all about how to make things work better for Donald Trump. And I don't think we've ever seen anything like it. And I'm sad that Mr. Lederman feels that way.
You can read Kevin Wooster's blog. On the other hand, sdpb.org/Wooster, and you can hear from him on Facebook, on social media, on Twitter, and also here every week on In the Moment. Kevin, thank you so much for being here. We'll talk to you next week.
My pleasure.